Good afternoon, you're very welcome. This is Brian Dowling standing in for Clare Byrne. On today's programme, empty seats at the Public Accounts Committee. What, if anything, can the committee do about the non-attendance of Angela Cairns and Frank Flannery? The bankers went before the Finance Committee, but did it make any difference? And at a time when thousands are still lumped with mortgage arrears, others can't buy a home and some are facing homelessness, property prices are on the rise again. Michael Noonan says, relax, it's not another property bubble. We'll examine the issues. First, let's catch up with the latest news headlines with Susan Jackson.
Thanks, Brian, and good afternoon from the newsroom. Motorists will face a fine of up to €1,000 if they're caught texting on mobile phones, even if the devices are mounted in a holder. Suspected offenders will face a mandatory court summons and, if convicted, a fine. The new law will come into force on the 1st of May. Diane Connor reports.
Texting while driving was already illegal, but there was a grey area surrounding the use of hands-free devices. If a driver was caught texting or accessing information on a phone resting in a cradle, a challenge could be taken. But the Minister for Transport has now closed that loophole by signing a new amendment to existing road safety legislation. Under the new law, if caught texting, a driver gets a mandatory court summons and a fine. For a first offence, the driver faces a maximum fine of €1,000, while a second offence carries a fine of up to €2,000. If caught three times within a 12-month period, the driver faces a possible jail term of up to 3 months along with a fine.
The Civil Publican Services Union, which represents lower-paid civil servants, has described as bizarre revelations that the HSE will miss its Haddington Road Agreement savings target by almost €200 million. A report in today's Irish Times claims that the potential shortfall was set out in a confidential consultant's report commissioned by the Health Service Management and presented to the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform on Thursday. Under the 2014 HSE service plan, the Health sector was to generate €290 million in savings under the Haddington Road Agreement, as well as a further €108 million from unspecified measures to maximise the potential of the agreement. Police in Ukraine have said pro-Russian activists have seized hundreds of guns from a police headquarters in Slavyansk and distributed them to protesters. Separatists have also seized a second administrative building. The Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Avakov promised a tough response. Despite a visit by Ukraine's interim Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk yesterday, pro-Russian separatists in two other eastern Ukrainian cities are continuing their occupation of local government buildings. A champion of the Crufts Dog Show is one of five Chihuahuas that have been stolen in the north of England. The dogs, which are worth tens of thousands of pounds, were taken by thieves who smashed their way into the owner's house in East Yorkshire. One of the dogs was named Best Puppy in Breed at Crufts this year. The owner, Mal Hilton, said it would be impossible for anyone to sell the dogs without being found out, and he feared they would be harmed. The weather forecast, it'll be cloudy with outbreaks of rain in many areas. Brighter and drier weather in the northwest will extend to all areas early this afternoon. Highest temperatures will range from 10 to 14 degrees. And that's all from the newsroom for the moment. Back to you, Brian.
Thank you, Susan. This is Saturday with Brian Dowling. We welcome your views on any of the topics we cover. And here's how you can get in touch. You can text us at 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie and our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. With me in studio now, John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD and Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Michael O'Regan, Parliamentary Correspondent of the Irish Times, and from our Limerick studio, Kieran O'Donnell, Fine Gael TD and also a member of the Public Accounts Committee. Well, one of the stories that has dominated the week, apart from the state visit, has been the exchanges between the Public Accounts Committee and rehab. This long-running controversy had another turn this week when Angela Cairns and Frank Flannery sent solicitors' letters to the committee indicating that they would not be attending. John McGuinness, we've learned a lot about rehab over the last number of months as a result of the work of the committee. We've learnt a lot more about the salaries in rehab, about the way rehab operates. What more do you want to know from Frank Flannery and Angela Cairns? What are the outstanding issues as far as you're concerned?
Firstly, we've learned a lot and it has been proven now that the rehab group is largely funded by the taxpayer. I think that's central to all of this investigation. And once you accept that point, that 95 million comes from the taxpayer, that there is a further 13.5 million that comes by way of the public contributions, and the overall turnover for rehab in Ireland is 118 million. So it's very much reliant on government funding. Once that's the case, then the public have a greater right to understand how that money is spent. So what do we want to know next from Frank Flannery and from Angela Kearns? From our hearings to date, it has been made clear that some of the most significant decisions were made by Angela Kearns and related to Frank Flannery in terms of the payment of consultancy fees of in excess of 400,000.
This is over a seven-year period.
Over a seven-year period. And that for a number of these years, in fact, since 2009, the payments were made to a company that had been dissolved. So we need to know about that. We also need to know about the coffin business.
Just before you go on, are you absolutely certain that the 400,000 euro or so that was paid in consultancy fees, that that money came from the public purse, that that was taxpayers' money, as distinct from other income that rehab may have had?
It came from the pool of money, which is mainly made up of taxpayers' money, we were told, at the Public Accounts Committee. And Mr. Poole clarified that for us. And because of that, then, we have a greater right to investigate that and to find out just exactly how that pool of money was made up and how Mr. Flannery was paid. And it is in the absence of the information around that that we require to get further information and further answers. Because the arrangement, we were told by Mr. Poole, was directly between Ms. Kearns and Mr. Flannery. So we have asked for the information around these various consultancies over the years, the arrangements for paying Mr. Flannery, and indeed as to why, when he became a board member, that the payments then shifted from rehab to a company in the UK. So they were making the payments during that period of time. The whole discussion that we had about the coffin issue, which involved a number of Ms. Kearns' family members, involved Mr. Flannery as well. And then there was an issue.
This was a business that was being set up.
Yes, there was an issue then around the involvement of Mr. Horgan in terms of the coffin business and Eco Solutions, which is a company outside of rehab, which Mr. Flannery was involved in as well, which brought about the purchase of coffins in China and delivery to rehab. There are a lot of questions that need to be answered in relation to that. And the reason why Mr. Poole couldn't answer the questions, he told us, was because he didn't have the information. He wasn't able to get all of the information for us, and it was mainly Ms. Kearns, Mr. Flannery, that would know about that.
In his statement earlier this week, Frank Flannery says that the committee initially asked him to deal with four particular issues relating to payments from the HSE to rehab under Section 39 and also in relation to the lottery scheme operated. He makes the point that his concern is that the committee wants to move beyond areas that are legitimately within its remit. These new issues in relation to the consultancy fees, have you now written to him to deal with those particular issues?
Now, these issues, these questions and the requirement for this information only came about last Thursday. So we will have to go through the transcript of that meeting and determine just exactly what information we want. But it's quite clear from the hearings that Ms. Kearns and Mr. Flannery are not important witnesses, they are central witnesses to this whole investigation, and that they can shed a light on all of the activities because they were there for a considerable number of years and had still had connections through the board and through businesses with rehab. And Mr. Poole and the board members that were present, they didn't know about it.
Just from the point of view of listeners, John McGuinness, when you talk about this investigation, what is the actual purpose of the investigation? Is it simply to account for all the public money expended by rehab?
It is to account for all of the public money that was given by the various departments to rehab, but it also looks at the governance issues, because in the governance issues, you have the same names appearing on boards multiple boards that are there within the rehab group. So there is a governance issue there. There's an accountability issue. And then there is an issue between the various funding departments and rehab that we need to determine the difference between taxpayers' money and private money. And it is clear from the hearings that it is mainly private taxpayers.
I want to bring in Ciarán O'Donnell, who is in our Limerick studio. Ciarán O'Donnell, what do you think should happen next in relation to this whole issue between the standoff as now exists between Frank Flannery and Angela Kearns and the Public Accounts Committee?
I think what should happen is that Ms. Kearns and Mr. Flannery would take up our invite and come before the PAC and sit down with us and deal with the issues at hand. It's nothing personal on behalf of the committee. We act as a collective unit. And as John McGuinness has just stated there, 95 million of taxpayers' money is going into the rehab group on an annual basis. The two companies that are based, we'll say training companies in Ireland, Rehab Care and National Learning Networks, are virtually fully funded by the taxpayer. And we found from, we'll say, our inquiries and our witnesses before us on Thursday that over 40% of the former CEO, Angela Kearns' salary, was funded by taxpayers' money. So what I would ask that in the spirit of cooperation, very much in terms of rehab itself, rehab does fantastic work, both in terms of the staff that are there up and down the country, both in terms of the end users and the wider work to do, the wider charity sector in terms of the fundraising, that to bring finality to this module in terms of dealing with rehab, that they will come before us and work with us and cooperate with us so we can actually do our job.
At one point, Ciarán, one of the central issues for the committee was the issue of salaries and pensions in respect of senior executives in rehab, including Angela Kearns and Frank Flannery. Mm. Given that both of them have sent solicitors' letters effectively saying that rehab cannot disclose details in respect of pensions or salaries, is that issue now closed off completely to the PAC?
I don't think so. I think it's very much now the ball is with Ms. Kearns and Mr. Flannery. The fact that 40% of Ms. Kearns' salary was funded by the taxpayer clearly indicates enough that people are entitled to know how their taxpayers' money is being spent. The users of rehab care are entitled to know. The people that fundraise up and down the country for rehab and the wider sector are entitled to know. And what I would ask them is that they would come in with us. Certainly they will see in terms of our meeting last week with rehab. It was a very constructive meeting. It's not personal, but I think, you know, we have a job of work to do. And really, I think the other factor, I suppose, that has come out of it outside of those issues is that the overall, we'll say, turnover or income that rehab earns, which is about 183 million of that. Over 50% of that is now coming from the taxpayer, the 95 million. And I think we certainly, in a wider thing going down, it's something obviously we as a committee collectively will look at. There's a case for it coming in before, in under this control and other general.
I just want to bring John McGuinness back in. In the absence of cooperation, as Ciarán O'Donnell referred there, by Frank Flannery and or Angela Kearns, you have said that the committee reserves the right to seek compellability. Surely that's really unrealistic at this stage. That would be a long, drawn-out process with no guarantee that the Dáil Committee on Procedures and Privilege would confer compellability on the Public Accounts Committee in respect of those two witnesses.
No, it's not a long, drawn-out process. And may I say at the beginning of this that Ms. Kearns' solicitor wrote to the committee and explained that she was on sick leave, that she is ill. So we accept that, and perhaps after this and when she's made a full recovery, and I wish her well, that she will reconsider the invitation and perhaps attend. In the case of Mr. Flannery, I would ask him to reflect on what happened last week and what we are about and to reconsider the invitation that has been issued to him. Compellability is something that you apply to the CPP for. It has been shortened in terms of the recent legislation on inquiries. The protocols and regulations are now almost in place for witnesses, and therefore the application, once it shows clearly that the witness can make a significant impact on the report and investigation that we are doing, then there should be a willingness on the CPP to request Mr. Flannery, in this case, to come forward. But like Kieran, I would urge him to reconsider his position and to come to the Public Accounts Committee and to make the give the information that's necessary so that we can move on with this, because the charity sector, which they say they have a passion about, is under serious difficulty.
Michael O'Regan, does Frank Flannery have a point when he says that he's concerned that the committee is seeking to move and roam beyond its remit and that it's moving into an area that he thinks involves partisan politics?
No, he doesn't. In fact, it's a nonsense argument on Mr. Flannery's part. And he's so far behaved quite disgracefully on this instance. He's an embarrassment to Fine Gael. The Taoiseach,
I think he would dispute that.
Of course he would. I have no doubt he would.
And he would take issue. I think he said in his statement that he has great respect for the institutions of the state, but that he feels in this instance he's been put in a position where he can't cooperate.
I mean, I don't get that. The $95 million paid to rehab last year has been referred to. The fact that it has charitable status, the money paid by Irish people in straitened economic circumstances to rehab. He's been asked some fairly basic questions, not least his pension, which must be quite handsome, by the way, because his successor was earning €240,000 a year. We now know that was relative to the times, was Mr. Flannery, excuse me, earning something similar. He's also got to explain this incredible amount of money, $400,000 paid to him for lobbying.
Over a seven-year period.
Over a seven-year period. Huge amount of money. And he was able to lobby, quote-unquote, because he had a pass from Fine Gael, which gave him access to Leinster House, including, apparently, the so-called...
Although a number of ministers have said that they met him casually on corridors, as you would in Leinster House.
As you would. That's a lot of money to pay to somebody who's meeting ministers casually in corridors. And the Taoiseach made... Brian, the Taoiseach made a point in the Dáil during the week. By the way, a Taoiseach very, very slowly... admitting under questioning from Micheál Martin that a director of a charity should not be paid for lobbying. But the Taoiseach made the point that a company like Rehab, you seek an appointment with the Minister of today to ask him or her to lobby them on any particular issue.
I just want to refer very, very quickly to a number of emails and texts that we're getting in. One says, story about the salaries and pensions and rehab have been circulating in recent years. My problem with John McGuinness leading the charge on this is that why wasn't anything done by him and his party during their long period in government? That's from John Ryan of Dublin 6. Another one says, sadly, apart from highlighting the way public money is spent, the Public Accounts Committee is a toothless setup. It has no powers to impose any sanctions. There's also another text here. Why do we need charities of this kind at all? Is it not the job of the health service to provide these services? Just one point, Michael. If the Public Accounts Committee does not have Angela Cairns for health reasons and or Frank Flannery, have they effectively run into a cul-de-sac in relation to their work?
I don't think so, because I think there now has to be huge pressure put, which I think there will be, on Mr. Flannery from his former party. I don't know, maybe he's still a member of the party, even though he stood down as a strategist. By the way, his contribution to the party's recovery has been greatly exaggerated, in my view, over the years. Mr. Kenny and others were the people who brought about the recovery. But no, I don't think so. I presume the Taoiseach is going to be asked about it in the Dáil again next week. And an interesting thing,
and
by the way...
And the Taoiseach and other ministers have and all called on him publicly.
By the way, an interesting thing about this. When Mr. Flannery was claiming the other day that there was a partisan political element to all of this against Fine Gael. Now, to my knowledge, Kieran O'Donnell on Primetime the other night denied that. James Riley, who's deputy leader of the party, denied it. And Simon Harris was also interviewed, and he denied it. So
Kieran, is there anything that the Fine Gael party can do to try to encourage Frank Flannery, through any contacts with him, to revisit his attitude or to review his approach to the Public Accounts Committee?
Well, the Taoiseach, as far back as early March, has stated that anyone that should come before the PAC should do so. This issue, in terms of our looking at the whole rehab group, really arose out of two elements. Number one, Minister Shatter initiated a review of the whole Charitable Lotteries group back as far as November 2011. And Minister Riley has instigated a review over the whole service providers area, and which came about reports coming in before the Public Accounts Committee. And, reference was made, Frank Flannery has made a substantial contribution to Fine Gael over the years, but nevertheless, we are dealing with issues in the PSC itself, which specifically arise in respect to taxpayers' money. Michael made reference to rehab's charitable status, but more particularly within the PSC, we have to follow the money trail. And certainly what has come... No, just one point.
Karen, Eddie Malloy has
come in to the rehab group to look at the whole corporate restructure. And that has come about because of the type of inquiries that we have got underway.
Let me go very quickly, Karen, to John McGuinness. John McGuinness, granted you have to follow the money trail, but that texture into us, ultimately the PAC is toothless in respect of all of this. You can't impose any sanctions on anyone.
No, we can't. And we've asked for that, and we're putting forward our proposals in relation to improving and strengthening the powers of PAC, and our legal advisors are looking at that at present. But look at what happened with the whistleblower. Look at what happened in relation to CRC. Look at what happened in the various departments when we discovered inefficiencies or poor spend of money. Substantial changes were made. And I think that the work that we do is significant, and the reform that we're bringing about is actually quicker and more extensive than the reform promised by the government.
We're going to leave that discussion for the present. After this short break, rising house prices. Are we witnessing the re-emergence of a new property bubble? Stay with us. Welcome back. John McGuinness, Kieran O'Donnell and Michael O'Regan are staying with us, but we're also joined now by Professor PJ Drudy, who, although retired, still maintains an active interest in housing policy and related issues, and by Carl Dieter, financial analyst and mortgage broker. Now, before we go to our panel, our reporter Della Kilroy spoke to potential renters and buyers in Dublin. She first spoke to people queuing at an open viewing for a two-bedroomed apartment in Dundrum South with an asking rent of €1,300. Here's her report.
The second time in 3 years I've been doing it in Dublin, and the prices are crazy. It's very difficult, but you've no alternative really, because if you want to pay anything less than the market value, you're going to be living in pretty much squalor really, a bedsit.
And then obviously the volume of people going for apartments, there could be 10, 15 people looking for the same apartment, but the cost has gone up.
Do you think you're getting value for money?
Actually, it's gone down from what I would have been paying in 2008. Like, some of the apartments have been really, really small, and for 1300, it's not worth it.
That's quite cutthroat. Like, you know, you have to get in as early as possible. Like, even the place we're going to now, we rang earlier to kind of put our offer in before even seeing it. Like, you know, we actually have a place now, and the rent's gone up to a price that we can't really afford. Like, it's nearly cheaper to buy at the moment than rent. But when we tell people it's 1350, they think we're nuts to be paying that, like, you know, but people renting have all the power. Like, if you're late, you don't get to see it.
With a shortage of housing in Dublin at the moment, property prices are rising by around €5,000 a month. For Thomas Maloney, himself and his fiancée have been searching for an affordable place to buy for over 6 months.
One property that we looked at, it opened at 350. It did sell well in excess of that, and it could increase by 15 to 20%. There is areas that we're no longer able to afford, and that's kind of pushed us out of areas where we would have thought that, like, we would have liked to have lived. Right now, there needs to be something done, like, immediately. Like there appears to be a stock of houses in Nama, like, and it's bad enough, like, that everyone is competing against themselves, work colleagues, farmworks, classmates. The more of those blocks of loan books are sold, it's like, it's pretty much making a generation of new tenants. That's what I would be worried about.
Meanwhile, in the IFSC in Dublin City, and as demand continues to exceed supply, renters and property owners told me what kind of an increase they've noticed over the past year.
I just moved out recently, and it was 450, 500, now I'm paying 650. It took me about 3 weeks to find an apartment. A friend of mine is actually looking for somewhere at the moment, and it went up on Daft yesterday, and it was gone by the time she went to view it, so tough.
Rent has gone up and property prices have gone up over the last, I'd say, 6 to 8 months.
How have you seen rent go up?
I have a rental property myself, so I'll be looking to put that up in the next 3 or 4 months, yeah. From my perspective, obviously, it's a good thing because the rent I get at the moment doesn't cover my mortgage on it, so it's good, yeah.
Living in NCI here, and the prices are going up already for next year. It's gone up a couple of hundred. And there's not really much you can do about it, I suppose. If you need to live up in town, you have to pay it, so in that sense, it's nearly extortion, but what can you do?
I moved into my apartment in Terneur like over a year ago, and then the rent went up again in December.
How hard do you find it to meet that rent?
I was managing money a little better as well, because the moment there's not much hope for any promotions or being made full-time in at jobs at the moment as well. So
do you think rent will go up for you?
I think it will go up, yeah, I really do. I've got friends that are looking for places at the moment, and I think because the demand is so high, people are struggling to find places and there's so much competition.
Yeah, rent has increased for me over the last few months.
Were you given a reason why it went up?
Market rates in general, we were told that's the reason why they were going up. So hopefully it doesn't go up too much though, because the wages and stuff aren't going up to meet it. That would be the main thing for me anyway.
What would you like the government to do about it?
Well, I think they could bring back the rent relief. I don't think they have that now. I think that was tapered off, but maybe introduce that back in again. The wages aren't going to go up. You'd need to have something done with the taxes.
I've just recently gone to sale agreed on my house, and it's achieved probably 60,000 to 70,000 over the asking price. So great for me, kind of. But yeah, there's a marked increase. I would think one would have seen easily a 7 to 10%, if not more, increase in the last 6 months to a year. And I think that's the way it's going to go.
Carl Dieter, listening to that report, you have people who are chasing rising rental costs. You have one couple who are going for a property at €350,000 and discovered it sold for well in excess of that. One seller happily making €60,000-70,000 over what they thought they might get. But there's a real sense of deja vu back to the really mad days of the property boom. What's going on, particularly in Dublin?
I suppose what you're seeing, there's a few things that come into play. Normally when prices rise, it's down to some form of scarcity. It can be forces of inflation, such as a higher demand than what's available. We do have a problem with that. We also have a problem with the places that people want to buy. They tend to want to buy houses, not apartments. Now, for renters looking for apartments, they're all squeezing into the same area as well. And because we stopped building, the people who are already occupants are not dying fast enough to make vacancies for the new people coming in to have places to go. You also, apart from that kind of demand pull inflation, you have the other type of inflation, which would be cost push, where you have rising things such as increased taxation that landlords face in terms of local property tax, higher costs for registration of the Private Residential Tenancies Board. And in order to fix this, you need to start building houses. But even when you get to that point, then you've got all these roadblocks in the way, such as 30,000 planning permissions, which sounds great. And that's how many are live right now around Dublin. But a lot of the people who hold those can't act upon them because are they solvent? And if they are solvent, are they going to be able to get credit in order to start
this? The banks lend.
So in a way, it's a perfect storm. But rising prices of themselves doesn't mean bubble. Bubble is where you have a fundamental difference between perceived market value and actual value. At the moment, as far as the central bank are concerned or international observers, we don't have a bubble. So you can't just say rising price, that's a bubble. The rising price is a symptom of a bad policy response to a housing shortage.
And a lot of people who are listening might be scratching their heads and wondering, We've come through a massive, massive property boom, a spectacular property crash. And people might be saying, how on earth did we end up with a housing shortage after all of that? PJ Drudy.
Well, just going back to the housing bubble, I would say that there is, in fact, I believe, a housing bubble on the way. It's in train, in fact. So I disagree with Carl there. Obviously, he's defining it in a particular way. I would define a housing bubble as a situation where the inflation of house prices is way in excess of the consumer price index. And currently, it is way in excess of the consumer price index. There's no question about it. 1 or 2% inflation normal and 13% in Dublin last year, possibly 15, 16, 20% this year.
Well, I think yesterday, Merrion stockbrokers were predicting a rise in Dublin of perhaps a minimum of 10% in this year and maybe more.
Well, that is, to me, a bubble. And basically,
or is that simply just confined to Dublin primarily because there's a shortage in Dublin?
Well, it's not entirely confined to Dublin because the inflation of house prices last year nationally was 8%. So, in fact, there is also inflation above the normal rate of inflation of house prices around the country, in the various cities in particular, Galway, Limerick, Cork and so on. So, I mean, what I am saying is that this will end in tears in the same way as it ended in tears in 2008. And there's no use fooling about it. And we are failing to deal with it.
But if the banks are not lending, PJ, and I think that is one of the issues that developers will say, they yes. can't access capital from the banks to pursue developments. In what way would it end in tears in that the crash essentially was because the banks were so exposed, they had such huge books, loans in relation to property developments?
The banks did not do their jobs.
they behaved irresponsibly right through the from 2000 onwards, right to 2008 when the crash came. If the banks are incapable or unwilling to lend money, then the government must find a way to deal with that. I mean, this is a matter for government. They cannot sit idly by.
Some people have said that what the government needs to do is to effectively try to get NAMA to accelerate its role in trying to provide housing to help to develop housing, to get more housing stock available. The estimates are something like 80,000 new housing units are needed in the next 5,000 years. Or in the next 5 years, I'm sorry. 80,000 in the next 5 years, got it.
Next 5,000, yeah. Well, I think NAMA sometimes can turn into a default answer as the panacea and ill of everything that happens in property. At the moment, we're seeing these price rises and it's causing problems. And I'm in agreement actually with PJ in the fact that I think we're forming, I think we're forming a bubble. In other words, we're laying the foundations for this event to happen. I don't know that we're already in it now. But really, like NAMA has something like 14,000 residential units, 10,000 were already let out. There's about 4,000 remaining. And that's a national figure. So it's not a case that that's going to resolve the issue that we have specific to the geolocations that are experiencing shortage. What you do have, for instance, is things like planning contributions where you can have an upfront tax of, say, 30 grand per unit, which usually does have to be paid upfront before you can break ground. But at the same time, we brought in a local property tax, which is what contributions used to try and achieve in the past because you couldn't charge every year. So it's kind of double taxation in that respect. And we have all these various issues.
And the point being that to some extent is an obstacle in the supply of housing in terms of getting developments underway.
Absolutely. And that ultimately gets passed on to the consumer and also the government. The government are the biggest beneficiary of housing sales. They get about 40% roughly of every new house price sale. And rising prices do serve a lot of constituencies. They're favourable to banks. They're favourable to people in negative equity. They're just not favourable to all the people who got into trouble initially. The difference is with other places that don't experience the kind of huge ups and downs that we do, and we've been doing this for quite some time, is that they have things like in Germany, the right to build, where if you own land, you have the right to build on it. You have to pay your local taxes and recoup the economic cost of the services.
Let me bring in Kieran O'Donnell. Kieran, do you have any sense at all, if you listen to the points that Carl has made, that government policy in the last few years may well be contributing to the rising prices because of the various new charges, such as the local property tax, water charges coming on stream, other development charges, that essentially they are all slowly helping to push up prices, particularly in areas like Dublin, where there is a shortage of homes?
No, I think, listening to the points about PJ and Carl, we're coming off a situation where property prices are 50%, well, they're now about 47% below peak in 2007. So we're coming off a situation where prices have fallen to a huge extent. I think there are a number of components we have to deal with. Obviously, there's a major issue, particularly in Dublin, with lack of supply. And I think the type of supply, and that's something that has to be dealt with. And the government will shortly be bringing out the construction sector strategy, which will involve NAMA. I think also we need to look at the issue in terms of, for a sustainable model, that must be complemented by the private sector coming in and building houses as well. And there has been a situation over the last number of years whereby literally the sale price was less than the cost of construction. That now appears to have reached an equilibrium, and that's now positive. And the supply of credit. And I agree with P. Johnny's point that I think that the Strategic Investment Fund, which is now evolving from the National Pension Reserve Fund, there'll be legislation coming through in that regard shortly. Certainly, I think there's a role in that particular area, and it's something I certainly would be positively disposed
to. Kieran, I might just put one point. We have a text in. One listener says, the overheating Dublin housing market is a direct result of the Dublin First approach by the government. They claim recovery in Dublin will boost the whole country, but all we will end up with is another damaging bubble in Dublin. We need a balanced national plan that promotes the whole country. What exactly, very, very quickly, is the main strategy in the construction plan that the government hopes to publish shortly?
Well, as a TD outside of Dublin, I certainly am very much pushing the regional dimension, but the strategy, as I understand it, and obviously I'm not privy to the full details, will involve NAMA being a component of it, looking at the whole area of the type of planning, the type of houses that have been built, the time frame they will be built, putting in place a mechanism where that will happen in terms of the private sector, but also looking at ways to ensure that funding can be made available, that this can happen. And I think like, we look at what, that we never go back to the situation where we had that rampant price increases. But we are coming off a very, very, very stark reduction in the valuation of properties.
Your colleague, Michael Noonan, in the last week has said he'd actually like to see prices continuing to rise.
Well, I think what Michael, I think, was talking about, it's about getting a property market that stabilises. And obviously that's needed. And you're looking at a situation to ensure that there is, people will go out and actually build houses for people based on the fact that the construction costs will be exceeded by the sale price. We've now reached that. What we now need to do is to put the components in place to ensure that we have a market that continues to be stable. And that's where, I think, when the government launched the construction...
I want to bring PJ Drudy back in. PJ, just on that point about having a market and having a housing sector that stabilises, how do we judge that? What's the benchmark for judging? What constitutes, if you like, quote-unquote, a normal property market?
Well, a normal property market should be where, as I said earlier, the inflation in house prices or in rents is similar to the general rate of inflation. Can I come back on the point about how prices have dropped over the last 5 or 6 years? If you actually look at the long term, since 1991, house prices have risen by 240%, while the rate of inflation has increased by 69%. So house prices are still actually overvalued in comparison what they should be if you compare them with the rate of inflation.
But I think a quick point there, Peter.
Very, very quickly, is
the construction cost as well that we have to be... We're looking to find a balance in the market, and that's where I think the government's strategy that will be launched shortly will very much look to focus on.
John McGuinness...
The reason why we have the crisis is because there is no strategy. You have cash buyers in the market... You have builders who are in trouble, and if they go to the bank, they're frowned upon as builders or developers, and they can't get money. You have a local authority that is top heavy in terms of applying local taxes. You have local authority applicants who are now up to 100,000 who can't get houses. You have the local authorities and the HSE driving rent increases because they're the ones paying the rent allowance. And you have properties going out of kilter with the market itself. So unless you address the different issues that are in there, such as the social housing issue on one side, which is costing the state a fortune in terms of rental subsidy schemes, rental accommodation schemes, and so on, you won't free up houses. So there is a need to construct local authority houses.
Hold on a second.
Can I just say to you, NAMA is, it may be an option, but it's not the only option. And everyone reaches for NAM as a solution. It isn't the full solution. We have no policy, that's why we're in crisis.
John, Fianna Fáil, as we all know, took an enormous political hit, largely because of the last property bubble. Do you break out in a cold sweat, or do you get the heebie-jeebies now when you see the kind of price rises we're looking at, particularly in Dublin?
I only break out in a cold sweat and heebie-jeebies on a Thursday morning at the Public Accounts Committee and see money being absolutely squandered. And when I think of that money, that should be applied
more
to local authority houses and builders and so on.
There are
sites and builders and plannings in this country that should be acted upon. And the critical ingredient in this is the bank and loans and making
Brian,
sure
can I make a quick
the
point there?
Very, very quickly, because we want to get Michael Regan back in.
We are where we are because effectively a property sector was left unchecked with the banking sector with lack of regulation back 5 years past hence under the previous administration. What we now need...
So just how much regulation will the government bring in?
The government will look... We've brought in terms of regulation with the banks and that's structured. What is now required now is to ensure that we do not have a situation where a market runs unchecked. And that's why...
And how do you stop that, Ciarán?
What you need... It's various components. The components are to ensure that you have enough supply. The components are to ensure that lending is done in a very...
It would take a long time to build the kind of houses that we need.
No, but
Carl Dieter.
Yeah.
When the guys are finished with their Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael lovers tiff, I think it's important to point out...
That we're never lovers.
When you have 40% of the cost of housing is government taxes... Government isn't the answer. Government isn't the solution. Government is probably the problem. Really what we need to do is ideally get government out of trying to control housing and get government to build social housing, because it's the people at the bottom end that are getting creased the worst. If they just did that,
Carl, very quickly,
and took some of the high end cost that they're the beneficiary of out of the system, so that we could house people instead of passing that on to them, so that they sacrifice all of their future income for housing.
Is it as stark as the point you made earlier that people are simply not dying quick enough to release housing stock?
That's maybe a bit of a more mathematical way of viewing it. What I'm saying is you've also got increased longevity, so that housing stock isn't coming back on as quick. And you know, we've got all these false bogeymen, cash buyers. Like, cash buyers is another result of government policy, because bank deposit drops down below 2%, and then they put the tax to the marginal rate. So people are going to go wherever they can get the highest return. The solution is, if it doesn't involve digging a hole and filling it with concrete and stacking bricks on top of each other, then you're doing something wrong. And the government could do a lot to allow that to happen by simply getting out of the way.
Michael O'Regan.
Yeah, Carol said earlier that the central bank was happy enough with all of this. I'd worry, given our past record with the central bank, if they're happy with this. I'd worry. I mean, if the government, the previous government, had listened to Morgan Kelly and George Lee and Richard Curran and people like that, we mightn't have ended up in the mess we are. But I noticed as well, by the way, during the week that Michael Noonan was saying in the Dáil that rents, now this is nationally, are approximately the same level as in January 2003. That might be true nationally. In Dublin, there is a huge problem with rents. We saw it there earlier. One of the people interviewed talking about a rent being demanded as nearly extortion. The government has to introduce some kind of control in the private rent sector so that people can rent apartments and houses and all that. And the other thing is this, Brian, anyone who lives in Dublin, it will inevitably pass some hideous apartment block or unfinished housing estate or housing estate that's half empty because the houses and the apartments couldn't be sold. Surely, be to goodness, something should be done in that area to release property at a reasonable price for people who want to buy it.
PJ, just a point. I was looking recently. There are some figures on myhome.ie, and in the first quarter of 2011, I think there were something like 7,000 plus properties for sale in Dublin. And in the first quarter of this year, there's just barely over 3,000. Now, it's not quite clear what's going on, but it might suggest that perhaps there are people who dipped their toes into the market in early 2011, couldn't sell or couldn't sell at a price they wanted to get, and are holding back. To put that with Michael's point, what scope is there for a government to actually try to control this market? Are they really at the mercy of market forces?
Well, I think this is the problem. The market has failed miserably for many, many years. And Michael is absolutely correct that in relation to private rental, there is really a need for rent regulation. I would call it rent regulation because the rent control term was a bad term in the past, and we are seen as bad. But he's absolutely correct in saying that rent regulation is essential. It operates in Germany, France, Denmark, Sweden, and a whole range of European countries. And, of course, standards. Now, the government has introduced standards, new standards recently, and that's good. But it's essential to implement those standards. Security of tenure is a problem in the private rented sector. People can be thrown out at a moment's notice, despite the 2004 legislation, which was well-intentioned. So, I mean, the private rental sector could be a very good option for people who cannot buy. The other option, of course, as John has mentioned, is social housing. Now, I would argue that social housing, there needs to be a dramatic increase in the provision. But also, I would argue that social housing, or let me call it something else, let me call it community housing, could be available, provided by government, built by government, and
would
rented
you rebrand
to a wider
PJ?
Sector.
Would you rebrand a PJ because of the connotations around
I would
social
rebrand,
housing?
Absolutely. I would rebrand social housing and call it community housing, which would be available not just to an unfortunate who is unemployed and who is marginalised, but also to teachers, doctors, professors, etc. Journalists like yourself in RTE. And they would be living side by side. We'd get rid of segregation or at least reduce it. So I think there's a huge case for competing with the market via this community housing option.
John McGuinness, after a long period of Fianna Fáil in government and living through the whole property boom, how optimistic would you be that any government can actually impose any level of controls at all in relation to the rental sector or the property market itself?
The controls need not be written down in terms of regulations, in my opinion. If you build the local, the community houses, the social housing, if you fill that market, you'll get a huge result from it. But what's happening is we don't exactly know how many are on the list. We say there's 100,000. But once you go onto the rental accommodation scheme, you're taken off of the housing list. So we don't know exactly what the numbers are. But in my opinion, the best step forward in terms of getting the economy working, in terms of solving the housing issue, is to take an action. And that action needs to be local government funded by national government, building those community houses or social housing, filling that need and allowing then the private sector houses that are currently rented and being paid enormous money for, allowing them into the marketplace to fill some other gap.
We're going to take a very, very quick break and we'll continue this discussion when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Saturday with Brian Dowling and we're discussing property prices and the recent trend of prices increasing, especially in Dublin. Now, we have a number of texts. One texter says, did that person really say on air a few moments ago that people are just not dying fast enough to free up property? Another texter, Paul Dorn from Clondalkin, says, just what is social housing? Another texter says, the government takes about 36% of retail house prices. It's just not economical to build until prices rise to a level where it's unaffordable to buy. I'm not quite too sure there. Why do we insist on building out and creating urban sprawls rather than building up where we have more room? Carl, I want to come back to yourself just in relation to, you want to make a point about the rental market particularly as well.
Yeah, in particular the area of rent control. Now, you can put nice words on it, rent certainty, rent regulation. The probably more correct dictionary term is just price fixing. And if it worked, it would probably have been rolled out effectively up to now. The fact is we had rent control in the past and it was undone, it was reneged. When you actually look at rent prices, private rents are back at around the way they were in 2003. That's a fact, and that is one that has regressed back to that time. But if you look at government rents for local authority housing, they're actually up 70%. So when you want to talk about who's the bad guys in the rental sector in terms of who's jacking up the price, who's the ones out there, you know, carrying on the most aggressive behaviour in terms of capturing all the money they can, it's actually not the private rented sector. It's the state. They're the ones who are behind it.
Kieran O'Donnell, just on that point, and before you come to that, there's just one texter says, Brian Boru should have stayed at home in 1014 and let the Danes take over. I'm not too sure you might go along with that, Kieran O'Donnell, but just the point that Carl was making in relation to that, the real big offenders here is actually the state. They're the ones driving up rental costs.
Well, no, I mean, local authorities will charge their rents based on cost, and certainly that is an issue, and I know it's an issue on the ground, but I suppose the point I want to take up, we've the governor, in terms of the central bank, we've the governor of the central bank coming in before the finance committee next week. And I think these are issues that we'll have to put to him in terms of his regulation of the banks, how he feels about the property sector. We had the banks in last week in terms of their dealings with arrears on mortgages and the fact that for a lot of institutions, over 50% of their so-called sustainable solutions involve legal remedies letters and repossessions, and it's something that the Governor's Central Bank will have to look at.
Michael O'Regan, just in relation to that point that Kieran O'Donnell made, and particularly with a lot of the bank executives in over the past week at the Finance Committee, the really big issue here from politically and the political nightmare is the number of potential repossessions. At a time that we're talking about property prices increasing, you have this other side where there are, and I think it was one of the executives from Permanent TSB made a point that they think there could be perhaps between 2,000 and 4,000 homes repossessed by Permanent TSB alone as a result of the mortgage crisis. But that's a political nightmare for the government as well, if there's large-scale repossessions.
Absolutely. And it's a frightening social scenario as well, there's no doubt about it, and a nightmare for the government. And if you look at Dublin, by the way, elections due in May, Brian, including a European election, 3 seats. And if the anger and frustration of the people mentioned in the Vox Pop earlier, the people trying to rent and all that, if that's manifested in the polls, then you could have some pretty strange results. One of the things I'd like to know about all of this, Michael Noonan was talking about in the Dáil during the week as well. He said that a large percentage of current house sales were cash, were being bought by cash. Who are these people? I would love to know. Who are these people with lots of cash at a time of economic crisis?
Well, there's quite a lot of cash people to try to answer Michael's question. Coming from outside, of course, the country, pension funds and so on, hedge funds, and they're buying up property, which...
They might be buying up property portfolios.
Portfolios, but the government could easily have possibly purchased these and rent them out in the same way, in a commercial sense, really. Can I make one quite important...
But is there a phenomenon that there are people who are entering into the normal, if you quote-unquote, property market, and are buying with cash, people who may have hoarded up cash during the boom, during the collapse?
There's no doubt about that, and that was always the case, interestingly enough. In the previous boom period, there was quite a considerable number of cash buyers also, about 52%. So it's always been a phenomenon. But I mean, one very important point I'd like to make. It's all about philosophy. We need to return to a philosophy which sees housing as a home as opposed to a commodity run by the market. Housing is a right. Under the International Covenant for Economic, Social and Cultural Rights of 1996, is a right.
PJ, is it in the DNA of the Irish people to see housing as a home, to view it in that sense? Or are we almost pre-programmed that we want to see it as an investment?
I think we need to get there. We need to get rid of this investment craze, really, which is sold to us, of course, by auctioneers and estate agents. It's just not
just
sensible.
On that point, Carl, if you look in recent times at the property supplements in all the newspapers, and it's good for the newspapers because it's advertising,
mm-hmm.
but 2-3 years ago, you'd look at a property supplement. If they either did not exist or they were wafer thin,
yeah.
You can see them filling back out again. I think in one national newspaper last week, there was one estate agent had one full page of ads on properties they had sold, not properties they were trying to sell.
Absolutely.
And does that
correct.
Not underscore the point that PJ is making?
Yeah, it's part of the estate agent grandstanding that they do amongst each other, and they all try and have big ads and whatnot. And it's a sign of an area that's in recovery.
Is it a sign of the madness returning?
It could be. And the thing is, like I mentioned earlier, for instance, when you were talking about cash buyers, there's 90 billion on private deposits in this country. So there's a lot of money out there in cash. And what I was trying to say earlier was that when you raise the tax on dirt up to the marginal rate or 41%, and you're now only going to get a 1% return, a natural tendency of that is for people to look for their yield elsewhere. And the beneficiaries will probably be the ISIC, because Irish people tend to buy ISIC stocks. And also the property market, and you can see that playing out already. The idea of turning housing into something that isn't a commodity, I fundamentally would have to agree with that. I think it's good, but you see, when your right comes at a cost to another group or another individual, then that cost actually does matter. And really what we have to do is focus on that cost and try and get it to a low cost so that it is affordable. Good housing policy is about sustainability and longevity for the maximum number of people. It's not about keeping people in houses they can't afford. It's not about keeping big families in small houses. It's not about keeping small families in big houses. It's about a common sense end result. And anything that we've done so far, and government in particular, has failed to address the fundamental issues of it, which is get building, reduce the taxes on it, let people who can build start doing it, and don't create false scarcity by having restrictive planning laws.
Kieran O'Donnell, I'll come to you, John, in a second. Kieran O'Donnell, just on one of the points that Carl raised there in relation to the dirt tax and the rate of dirt tax now, does he not have a point that for those who have money on deposit, that effectively by small return, the government is essentially putting them into a corner where they're going to look elsewhere, and some of them will go into the property
there's
market.
There's also no CGT on property which once it's held for 7 years, and that's a huge windfall gain in the making. So
there's several things acting at once. Kieran O'Donnell.
The government have to make decisions at any particular point in time. But I just want to take a couple of points that Carol made. Like what you have to put in play, I don't think it's necessarily one thing will work. It's about an integrated model. And that's really, I think, what the government will be looking to do, this construction sector strategy. We have to put in place, there is clearly a problem with supply of family homes in Dublin, in the Dublin area. That has to be addressed. There's clearly an issue in terms of there's certain availability of credit for people to actually go out and build those houses. I think that's where the strategic investment fund, which will come out of National Pension Reserve, will come out. There's clearly a need in terms of, and the Governor's Central Bank will be in before the Finance Committee next week, in terms of how the banks, the type of measures that banks are going to do to lend money to people who want to actually purchase houses. And finally, the whole issue of planning. It's not what happened, like you've many housing stock around the country that are unoccupied. It's not necessarily about the number you build. It's also about the type you build and that it's an integrated model. And I take PJ's point that you have something where prices rise in a sustainable manner. But we are, nevertheless, coming off a base where prices fell enormously. And, you know, in terms of rents, you know, that's a factor, I suppose. It's acute in certain areas and has risen. But I think what we'll bring forward in terms of the construction sector strategy will certainly look to do that. But it will be an integrated model which will involve both public and
John
public.
McGuinness.
Brian, the vast number of people in the country look upon houses as family homes.
Correct.
They want a home. Now, if you come at it from that perspective, well, we have 100,000 people on the waiting list waiting for a family home that the government or local government is not delivering. We have people at rental accommodation with no security, families unable to pay their local authority rents because of the excess that they are being charged. And then you have the thousands of people that are going to lose their homes because of the fact they're in negative equity, they can't pay their mortgages, and they're going to come back onto the local authority housing list. There is no strategy,
and there is
a crisis.
John, let's just finish your point.
The fact of the matter is that the banks came before the Oireachtas committees last week, and they are misleading in terms of how they're putting forward their figures and their statistics. And if they
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there because we're running out of time. That's our lot for today. Thanks to all our guests and to you for joining in. Claire will be back with you next Saturday at the same time. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you for listening.
Saturday with Brian Dowling was produced by Roisin Boyd. The researcher was Leslie Anderson, the broadcast coordinator Maeve Mooney, and sound supervision today was by Cara O'Hare.